Hi guys, welcome to Dead by Tomorrow Interviews. My name is Daniel Winter and my co-host is Andrew Monroe. As we explore different topics that are worth thinking about today, we want to bring in guests to share their own unique perspective. We hope you enjoy hearing from our guests as much as we enjoy talking to them.
Hey guys, welcome back to Dead by Tomorrow. We have Jonah Gray with us today, and we are missing Daniel. So for those of you that just absolutely love Daniel's melodious tones, I'm sorry he was not able to make this episode, but I have one of my favorite people getting to do an interview. Who's Jonah. Jonah is one of the coolest guys I know in Amarillo and probably in Texas and possibly in the world. So about Jonah, because that's what we do here, and we want to hook you in with how cool he actually is. So Jonah does marketing. He does a tire, does, I don't know if you can do a tire shop, excuse me. He works with his brother at a tire and rim shop, which is a lot cooler than it might sound if you don't know about that industry. He has a really sweet t-shirt company with his other brother called Skelly's, and we will link to that in the show notes as well. All of this will be linked in the show notes. You need to go check it all out. And then on top of that, he has his own podcast, ReThoughts. So if you've been following along with our social media, you would have seen a couple months ago, we hopped on with Jonah to talk about Dead by Tomorrow on his podcast. We are finally coming back around to get him on ours. Now, that said, Jonah wears tons of hats. He's a fit guy. He does all these cool things. We could probably talk about a whole lot of different stuff. But the main reason we have Jonah on is not that podcast reciprocity, whatever that is that goes around. It's actually because Jonah just went on a vision quest, and it sounds cool and super self-improvement oriented and something that I think everybody should probably do. So Jonah, welcome on. How are you feeling after your vision quest?
Thanks for having me on. That was I said awe a couple times to myself while you were introducing me. It was sweet. It was really heartfelt, but it feels honestly like waking up from a dream, coming back into reality. I was gone for 12 days on this vision quest, and out in the woods, you're just with 12 other people for the most part. And then we went on a solo during 3 days of that trip. So then you're by yourself. And so even coming back from that, those 13 other people, it's also like waking up from a dream and then coming back into society. It's like inception of dreams, honestly. But
all right, so let's go into the basics on that. Okay. What was your vision quest? Like, how did this come about? Where exactly were you? What did you do while you were on it? Let's just jump in. Give me the whole data dump of information, why you wanted to do this in the first place, how you got involved, everything you can think of. And I will pepper you with questions as I can, but the less work you make me do on this, the more I get to just sit back and listen, the happier I'm going to be.
All right. I mean, honestly, 12 days where you begin, but how I came about doing this, how I got introduced to this program, it's through the Animus Valley Institute. As I initially started working with them through doing their Wild Mind Intensive a couple years ago. So the whole program is kind of is foundationally based in Bill Plotkin's books, The Wild Mind, Nature and the Human Soul, Soulcraft, and his newest book, The Journey of Soul Initiation. So that first Wild Mind Intensive was based solely off of Wild Mind. And all of this is ecotherapy. So he provides a framework, a model of the psyche, a map of the psyche, to kind of cultivate wholeness and reduce fragmentation and kind of really just sort the inner voices that are going on, your internal dialogues, like with your inner critic, loyal soldier. And it's all archetypal. I don't know if you're familiar with any like Jungian psychology, but he talks about archetypes in all these different cultures where they're really symbolic of what's going on internally versus representing something that's actually happening, like in mythology and, you know, the archetypes of the hero and all of these different things. So it's all symbolic, but in this framework, you're able to observe that I am this whole thing. You know, a lot of people, we have this tendency to fragment, take these personality tests and then like put people in boxes and categorize things. And one thing that this does is makes it very clear that this isn't a diagnosis. This is all self-reflective. It's literally like looking on a map, trying to figure out where you are. And so in this trip, this one was soul-centric. Without looking at the map, it's kind of confusing, but it's a Western facet, emphasized in the Western facet, where you go deep into mystery and into like dying to identities that you know that no longer serve you, and looking at your shadows and various things like that, where it is what Bill Plotkin kind of describes as in this developmental stage of the psyche. It's kind of this wanderer in the cocoon. So if you take this imagery of the cocoon for a caterpillar, the cocoon is the tomb for the caterpillar and the womb for the butterfly. So it is this phoenix like transformation, this dying to whatever I was so that I can be born to whatever I can become.
I like it. So you basically were looking at, and I might be interpreting too much, you were kind of breaking out of an archetype. You're kind of trying to shift your mindset from what you were maybe operating in, like the mindsets you had about who you were as a person. You were looking to kind of upgrade into a more open-minded, less culturally biased mindset. Is that kind of what it was?
Yeah. So there's several different reasons why somebody would go on a vision quest. So specifically though, in the beginning of this trip, we have what's called a council where everybody is circled up. Everybody has a chance to talk. I think you get about 5 minutes to speak, and we all describe our intention for this journey, for this trip. And so what I described is there are these feelings of, or this identity of inadequacy and undeserving and really just ill-preparedness for life that come up with me on a regular basis that I've been working on letting go. And that's one of the things that I was dying to on this trip. So one of these beliefs about myself is this belief that I am not good enough, you know? So that was my intention. It's not always, you know, biases that we hold, you know, like societal beliefs and biases and things of that nature, but it can be. So it's largely like I said, with this map, it's largely looking at the map and figuring out where you are and where you need to calibrate to. So if I'm in this northern facet, the north is the nurturing generative adult. That's what the facet is called. And I am always in the north. Maybe I need to recalibrate and move south towards the wild indigenous one. So if you think of the nurturing generative adult as kind of your internal, how am I parenting myself internally? So fragmented ways of doing that is with the loyal soldier or the inner critic, as I brought up earlier. There's also the lion tamer. I mean, there's a huge list of just different sub-personalities that come up in each of these facets. So for example, the lion tamer tames kind of the wildness of the psyche, to the wildness of the whole. And in the South is that wild indigenous one. That's where, you know, your sense of belonging is. Indigenous being belonging to something specifically, though, belonging to your psyche, belonging, just having a general sense of belonging. When you're fragmenting in the North, a lot of people have a tendency to also not feel like they belong. So
I see.
Just for example.
So to oversimplify this for anybody not keeping up, is it basically you're just working on like, hey, I need to be a better, more rounded person?
Yes. Yeah. It is to simplify it. You could say that.
Okay. We'll go with it.
You know, and it's not necessarily just well-rounded. There are plenty of people out there who continue to live a fragmented lifestyle who are very well-rounded and have a lot of stuff together and, you know, are very happy. And there, so it's not really about, I don't know, growth in the sense that you need to come and do this type of work, but it can be so healing as in like, if that person still continues to not find a sense of belonging in anywhere they go, although they thrive in most areas of their life, they live a generally healthy lifestyle, but they would like to make an inquiry into why I don't have this sense of belonging anywhere I go. This might be a good tool, medicine.
Okay. I like it. Now the part, whenever we talked about this, cause I ran into you at the coffee shop. I think we're at the coffee shop. That's probably where we were. And you were telling me about this. I really like the concept of what you guys were doing. So you were for 12 days in Utah, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what was it actually like? What did you do for 12 days?
So at the beginning of it, so we were at the four corners of Utah. So we were on this mesa. They called it Beauty's Mesa. It's got another name. I can't remember the actual name of it, but we can see like Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado from this position, and just taking in this beautiful view of like the canyon lands and the mountains. And, you know, you can see Shiprock from where we were. So that's part of it, is just being exposed to really these panoramic views, these natural phenomena, these trees, the ponderosa pines, and really becoming acclimated to that, as opposed to like clocks and phones and just getting out of the societal tune that we're constantly humming to ourselves. So that's part of it, is letting go of my day-to-day role so that I can be present here. And in the beginning of that process, it's all preparation for our solo. And on our solo, we were also fasting for it. So for 4 days, we fasted. And for three of those 4 days, we were completely alone, completely by ourselves. So,
wow.
Yeah. And it's a, you know, there's like this shock value to it, but you know, like there is, it's, I really just want people to know about this practice. You know, like I recommend doing this type of stuff safely. I don't recommend just saying, hey, I'm going to do a 4 day fast on my own. And is like, I strongly recommend having something like that facilitated. But, you know, a lot of people, when you tell them this, they're like, geez, like, I don't know, I could go 4 days without food. And it's like, it'd be nice to try. Maybe you should try it. You know, it's like, you never know until you give it a try. With the preparation leading up to it, it's kind of setting the intention for what we want, or what we're going to get out of going on our solo, what practices we're going to do. Are we going to do any type of ceremony? And then why even do those ceremonies? So for example, leading up to it, we had a fire ceremony. So prior to the trip, we're instructed to bring an object to offer to this fire that is symbolic of maybe an obstacle or a belief or an identity that we can burn and let go of. So during this fire ceremony, you kind of state your intentions with the object that you're offering to it, like why you're offering this item up, and letting it go, like giving it to the fire. And it's just like this beautiful intentional practice and mindful. It makes you so aware of the things that you hold on to, and that the identities that you claim to have, and realize that you are not really any of them. You can become whatever you'd like to become. So with this with the ceremonies, they say that a ceremony is simply, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end, right? So it's kind of like a story, right? You have to open up your ceremony some way, maybe with poetry, maybe with prayer, maybe with a song or dance or something that really grounds you in this thing. Because pretty quickly you'll go, just start going through the motions of these ceremonies. Like you'll bring something to a fire, you'll throw it in, and it doesn't really mean anything at that point. So it has to have your intention set into it. It has to have this ritual, these rites that are passed, and you then have the middle part, the ceremony in the middle, the meat of it, where that's where you're offering something to the fire. Or I did a death lodge on my solo, where I essentially had a memorial service, a funeral. And in the middle of that, I'm sitting in a hole that I dug myself, and I laid these logs over me like I'm, you know, put away in a casket. And prior to entering that hole, I read my eulogy. I invited everybody, all my loved ones, to my memorial service, excuse me. And then climbed into the hole and pondered what it means to die in this moment. What is dying at this moment? And then after that, kind of have this, what would you call it? A birthing ceremony. I don't really know what you'd call it. Like at the end of the beginning, the middle, and the end. So at the end, having a birth, you know, what am I now? What have I become? So what identities do I get to hold now?
That is so cool. And something you said earlier about how people have these preconceived notions of who they are.
Mm.
I think that is so important for people to get past, because lots and lots of humans that I have met
they'll say things. They'll say, well, I don't eat that kind of food, or I don't try those kind of things, or that's not who I am. And what they're saying is, I don't branch out from who I perceive myself as a person.
Yeah.
And it hurts me so bad every time someone says that, because they're limiting themselves to limit themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just, I can't imagine that's good for you. And it definitely isn't interesting. It doesn't bring anything to your life by having these arbitrary boundaries on, well, this is what I do because that's what I do. And it's like, well, don't you want to try escargot? Don't you want to see what happens when you dedicate yourself to running a marathon, or, you know, whatever it is? Or, hey, maybe you should be a better person. Maybe you're not OCD. Maybe you're just being an ass. Maybe if you relax a little bit and start caring about other people, you'd not be proud of the fact that you're kind of rude to people about this thing. So I don't know. People, there's a lot of people that have trouble with that. So I love the concept of using a ritual to wash away or burn away some of these preconceived personality notions that people have to grow as a person. Because that, I think that would be so great if everybody was required to do that. I don't know what world that is that we get to do that, but I would love it.
Oh man, I have so much to say on this subject. you mentioned limitations. There's a quote from Peter Crone, who I will quote till the end of my days. He says, fight for your limitations and you get to keep them. So basically, any of these individuals who are limiting themselves and who cannot let go of this identity of, you know, I'm not good enough for X, Y, and Z. I'm not an athlete. I'm not a singer. It's like, well, you know, if you hold on to those, if you fight for them, I'm not gonna keep trying to take them away from you. Like, you get to keep them. Nobody's gonna take them away from you. So this process with like the wild mind, it's so enlightening when you get to look at this map and begin to understand it, read about it, and sit through these lectures, and then, you know, practice the invitations that these guides give you, because you start to realize that those things, like the ways that you are limiting yourself, are just these sub personalities that I mentioned, coming in to protect the psyche, to protect you, right? So at some point in your life, the inner critic came in to protect you from being perhaps embarrassed again, or just feeling some type of pain, right? You have this sense of danger that, like, the lion tamer came in and said, you shouldn't be so wild. Do you see what happens when you're so wild? Do you see what happens when you're authentic? And so then you pull back, and then you grow into adulthood, and you don't know why you can't find a sense of belonging or really connect with somebody. Or because, you know, when you really connect with someone, it is so dependent on whether or not you can be authentic with them. And when it comes to, like, with rethoughts, and I love how you brought up, you know, the burning things again. I love how you brought that back up. So the burning these limitations, these identities, but it's also, the way I frame it, is pruning back the things that no longer serve us. So, and that's what I talk about in Rethoughts About pages. It's like trees, right? So we go in and prune branches that are getting in the way of the growth of the tree, that are sapping too much nutrients or running into other branches. We promote growth through taking something away. And so with these identities that we hold, these limitations or these sub-personalities, it's all about pruning them back. You know, it's like taking them off, so that this is acknowledging, for one thing, that they have served us, because that is so important. Because if you come in and you say, you know, my lion tamer is a real, you know, piece of work and I hate him and whatever else, it's like, well, you know, there's another sub-personality coming in and acting fragmented toward your psyche. And so this whole process is all about holding the psyche and realizing that none of those voices are really separate from you. And so one of these part of the practice is reintegrating those voices into the council. So although we're pruning them back, we're taking away like their hold on our lives, we're also inviting them back into the council as, you know, wise members of our psyche who have came in, and we have such gratitude and reverence for them because they came and protected us. They came and saved us in our time of need or our painful time periods, but the war of childhood is over, so they don't have to keep fighting it, or the war of adolescence is over, or whatever else. I mean, there's just so many applicable areas where this framework can be laid upon, can be viewed, your life can be viewed through this framework. And, you know, so one thing that came out of this trip was a reassurance, a reaffirming what we call like a mythopoetic identity. So kind of earning your new name, your nature name. And mine is Pando. And I've talked about this on my podcast. I don't know if you and I have talked about this, but...
No, we haven't. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
So the imagery of Pando, the myth of Pando. So Pando is a aspen grove in Utah. It's like 47,000 aspens. Then they're the clone of the same aspen tree, and it's considered like one of the largest living above ground organisms. And Pando is Latin for I spread or I expand. And so me as Pando, what does that mean for to take on that identity? It is a realization and an understanding that everyone is pure potential. I am pure potential. And I often see people as pure potential, but it has always been really hard for me to see myself that way. And so now it's practicing the self vision of pure potential. This idea that I can take up more space, that I am never done growing, that I am never done changing, that I have there's a process of continuous pruning that has to take place. And so part of the medicine of Pando is also helping other people realize that they are pure and that they can grow into more and more space. That there's, you know, the only limitations are the ones that they place on themselves. You know, I talk about how there's nothing on this planet that bears more weight than the limitations that I set on myself until I stopped feeding. So when I stopped feeding those sub-personalities, when I stop feeding those limitations, they become emaciated. When I stop taking on the identity of the victim, for example, then I'm no longer that. I'm no longer the victim. There's no longer an identity or a role that I take, that I hold. So I've pruned it back, and now I can take up more space. Really just letting go of these things that are ultimately limiting.
That's cool. Pando. All right. I like it. And thanks for sharing. That's pretty personal. And I bet it's not the easiest thing to do, is sharing something about how you view yourself and what that.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Personally, you know, we all talked about how we were going to talk about this trip, how we're going to present it to people. And part of it is, what is your intention with sharing it? Because like, you don't really want to define what you experience on these types of journeys, because it is so deeply personal and so really symbolic and experiential that it doesn't really matter what you say. Nobody else can experience it as well. And so it's this sense of phenomenology, like the sunset that I experience, the experience that I have when I see a sunset is not going to be your experience. And so when I describe it, I'm really taking away from, you know, your experience of it. Like, go and look at the sun, go and watch the sunset. So go on this journey, go and meet mystery. Because when you start to define this quote mystery, it is no longer mystery. It is no longer the thing that you are setting out to go and meet. So, and it really takes the out of the whole experience. But like, when, you know, you want to talk about this on your podcast, my philosophy is I'm an open book. You just have to keep turning the page. You know, like, I'll share, I'll tell anybody really anything, but they just have to make an inquiry into my life. You know, it's like, I'm not going to tell everybody about my life if they're not interested. I'm not going to tell
you. That's how you end up being a weirdo at the bar.
Yeah, I'm not going to come up and tell you about my high school days or whatever else. But if you make an inquiry into what I did on this trip or why I went on it or whatever else, I'll tell you all about it. You know, so, but that's just my personal philosophy. And I try not to do it in a way where I'm like just trying to, for one thing, preach, but also just give a shock factor of, you know, because that's often the case. It's like, well, where have you been for 2 weeks? Well, I was in Utah, and you can leave it as something like that. It's like, okay, well, what were you doing there? I was on a vision quest. Then you start, they ask these questions, you explain a little bit. And then I was fasting for 4 days, and they're like, wow, I don't know if I could do that. And so it's this weird sense of, did I talk about that just to present myself in a certain light, or what is going on? Like, what is my intention with even sharing this type of information? But I just love these types of experiences, and I want to expose people to them. I want to facilitate them for other people, and I want them to be more accessible for really anybody, because I mean, they're pivotal moments. They're catalysts. So I think they're necessary.
No, I get it. That's good. And it's good to have that kind of that talk with yourself. You're like, hey, am I doing this because I want to look cool? Or am I doing this to help people? And that's something, you know, I run into it, and I'm sure everybody else runs into it too. It's hard to sometimes remind yourself like, hey, I don't need to check your ego, I guess, to check your ego at the door. I run into that all the time. Personally, I think as soon as we start putting other people first and being less selfish and more, you know, you're still being selfish. You're hoping to make yourself feel good. But if you start putting other people's interests first, like, hey, can I help this person with this information or this story? I think that really starts to help you grow and feel better and be just, that's the direction you should be going as a person, I think. So I could be wrong. I am a lot, but that's just my opinion there.
Yeah. No, I love it.
Good. Real quick, before we jump into story time, I want to see if you have any hard-hitting actual tips on how you got through a four-day fast. Because I've done a couple 72-hour fasts, so three-day fasts, and periodically do a 24-hour fast. And they're tough. They're tough. The 24 hours tough. The 72 hours is really, really tough. I haven't done 4 days. For people out there, you know, for our friends hanging out with us here, what did you do to get yourself through 4 days of fasting?
Yeah, I honestly had the unique experience to be able to go into the wilderness and do this. I mean, it's very different if you're at home and you have all of this food that's easily accessible. So my recommendation is if you get those opportunities to go on something like this, like maybe a retreat or specifically a vision fast, then, you know, take it. But I don't have access to food. We had an emergency food stash just in case somebody close by in my group blew their whistle, like they're hurt or they're in trouble or whatever else. And I have to break my fast and I have to break my solo and go check on them. When you're sitting there for 4 days and you have an intention for being there, you have these ceremonies, you have these ways of preoccupying your mind. I mean, I did a lot of journaling. I read old entries in my journal to the trees and the birds, and you know, you get pretty out there with it. So it's really just occupying your mind and then making it inaccessible. There, you don't have the opportunity to eat. I mean, I thought about food so much while I was out there, so I can't imagine doing it at home where all of that food is a short drive away, you know. So the mental game is not as bad. Like, the mental game is hardly, or at least having to have the willpower to not eat that granola bar that I had stashed is not that difficult, because it's like, well, what am I going to do after that? Like, I can't pig out right now, so I'm not going to eat it.
So. That's cool. Well, awesome. Thanks. Did you do any kind of gratitude practice or anything while you were hanging out without food?
Yeah. So, I mean, there is a lot that comes up while you're out there in the wilderness, just kind of with your own thoughts. So I actually did a lot of ruminating. I did a lot of, like I said, thinking about food too. And so then once you get past that though, you realize how much time you've spent, you know, doing what you do at home, or at least being the same, a similar thought process at home. And then you're like, let's build something with rocks. Let's be like really intentional with this moment. And so you, as far as gratitude goes, you start having gratitude for, you know, the trees for providing you some shade, or these dead trees that are providing branches for you to make circles in the, on the ground, and all of these just different things that you normally wouldn't think about. So you're just having really this open dialogue with everything that is around you. And with my ceremony, my fire ceremony that I did on my own, on my solo, there was a specific intention of letting go of people in my life who have made me feel inadequate. So I wrote a whole list of, and it was mostly romantic relationships. It's like, I have a tendency to pursue somebody who I know I'm not right for, who I know who is not right for me, who I know really, and it's not every person I've ever sought a relationship with, but I do have a tendency to chase this. But I formed a list as per recommendation from one of my guides on this trip. And when I had the fire ceremony and really let this go to the fire, I had just immense gratitude for these individuals and teaching me something that, you know, I finally am catching, that I'm finally noticing. And as opposed to saying, like, I'm letting go of these individuals who made me feel inadequate, I ended up changing the verbiage and said something along the lines of, like, I'm letting go of these individuals who I sought, who I pursued in order to have a continued belief that I am inadequate. And it is not fair for them. It is not fair for me. It is not fair for anybody in the crossfire either, because I am really just going out and confirming the bias. I'm confirming the belief that I am inadequate, that I am not enough. And so for me to find individuals and place them in these roles, I mean, it's set up for failure. It's set up for toxicity and insecurity and just fragmentation. So really just dying to that identity and choosing yourself. And there was a lot of gratitude that came out of that. And then the death lodge. I mean, you write your eulogy and then you share it with, you mindfully invite loved ones in spirit to this funeral that you're having, this death lodge.
Man, and who doesn't want to attend their own funeral? That sounds cool.
Yeah. And I've written my eulogy on several occasions, and just because I find that it is a catalyzing practice, but not once has it been like this. And sometimes I'll write it from the perspective of like my little brother, because I feel like he would have the most to say. I feel like he would, I'm sure all my brothers would speak at my funeral when that time comes, but it was like, I always pictured Roman doing it. I always pictured my little brother doing it. And on this one though, in some eulogies, I give myself like a long life. Sometimes I give myself a short life. It's just kind of where I'm at, depending. But in this one that I wrote for my death lodge, I wrote it from the perspective of my son, if I ever have a son. So I don't have any kids, for those of you listening. That's not even on my radar at the moment. But if I were to give myself a long life writing this eulogy, I wrote it from the perspective of my son. And really looking at my life and what I would like to be, how I would like my son to see me, really humbling and developed so much. And I mentioned, you know, like, you know, he could be an asshole. I know he could be. He would tell me all the stories about the times where he was a real piece of work from the perspective of my son. But then that's when like the pando kind of came out, and he says something along the lines of like, if you asked what he was, if you asked him personally, he'd tell you that he is pure potential. And then he'd tell that's you, cool. And then he'd tell you that so are you. And so all that pure potential stuff really came up in my death lodge. And I'm sitting there practically buried, looking at the stars and just contemplating all of these people in my life who might have shown up to something like this memorial service, and all the people who'd be invited, and seeing them as pure potential and holding them close and maybe seeing them weep, maybe seeing them laugh at the funny, you know, stories that we'd have together, the experiences and whatever else. And then coming out and being like, I get to go see them. I get to go see all of these people. I get to see my grandparents. I get to see, you know, just anybody that I love, anybody who was invited. I get to go see Andrew.
Wait, am I dead then?
No, you were invited to the memorial.
Oh, good. Well, and so I love the concept. And for anybody that's, you know, I think it's great to think about death. Because it kind of goes back to the personality thing. If people don't acknowledge they're going to die, I think it causes problems down the road. But for the sake of people who maybe can't handle that emotionally right now, I did my own little vision thing through this other program. We won't get into that very much. But one of the prompts whenever we were working on vision stuff was actually you did a similar technique where you described your like birthday or 90th birthday. Mm. You talked about, you know, who's the person who knew you the best and would give a speech at your birthday party and tell about the life that you had. So it's a way to sidestep the fact that you're dead.
Yeah.
Be like, who's the important person who is at the party, the birthday party for you? Like, who are all the people in your life that have shown up? Do you have kids? Is it your kids talking? Is it your wife or your husband talking? You know, what do they say about you? What does your legacy look like? All that kind of stuff. It's really good to kind of get that focus. What do I look like at the end of the line? Like, where does this path that I am walking take me? And work backwards on what people are going to say, because it does. You know, if you're being at people and that's kind of your thing and you spread it out, no one's going to be at your birthday party when you're 90. Mm-hmm. No one's going to be at your funeral. And so it's good to think about. I like that concept, and I like the funeral. I like the birthday party, whatever it takes to get you reflecting on the future, which is a weird thing to say out loud, reflecting on the future. But I like it.
Yeah, I kind of frame it as what seeds are you planting?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And so what are you going to sow when you are older? Are you going to, if you are planting seeds of fear, you're going to sow regret. If you're planting seeds of love, you're going to sow gratitude. If you're planting seeds of joy, you're going to sow that gratitude. So it is, or sorry, reap. I believe I'm using the wrong word. Reap.
It's okay. We'll go with it.
We'll go with it.
We're not here to throw stones.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah. So just kind of framing that, like, what kind of fruit are you going to be harvesting at the end? Mm-hmm. You know, what flowers do you get to smell? What are they, weeds? Are they, you know, so just framing it in this way that, and you know, I've planted plenty of sour fruit in my life. And that's why I've come to this space of attempting to prune that back, attempting to deroot those seeds and, you know, try again.
So, you know, that's awesome, man. I like it. Well, I know you've listened to the podcast before, so, you know, this last part is your challenge to the listeners or friends that are participating in this conversation with us. Mm-hmm. And you're, you know, if you have a story you want to share. So I'll open it up. If you've got a story, let's jump into it. If not, drop us a challenge and we'll close it out and let you, you know, keep on living.
Man, stories, so many stories to tell, but pertaining to this, so
it can be whatever you want, man.
Okay, man. But there's just so much to choose from. Can I get a prompt?
Yeah, let's see. How about what was a time that were afraid for your life?
Okay, yeah. Well, history of as a rock climber, there's been plenty of times where you're in a sketchy situation and falling. But I'd say specifically the one that came first to mind. I used to run in the canyon on a regular basis. I'd go every week and run different trails, Paladro Canyon, for those of you who are listening. And on this particular day, I hadn't brought any, you know, anything with me. I didn't bring my music. I didn't bring a bunch of water that I normally bring. And I decided to just run as far as I could. And so I took the rock garden trail up to the rim of the canyon. So you start at the bottom of the canyon and you climb elevation until you're out. And then I ran the rim, and then I kept running the rim, and the rock climber in me was like, oh, look at this crack. Look at this, this thing that I could climb down into. And so I did, I got back down into the canyon, and then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to climb back up because there's not really a trail to get back to my car. So I was just going to go back, and, I found this other crack because, you know, being me, I have to explore. I can't go the same way that I, climbed down.
Of course not.
And, that's not allowed. it just doesn't compute. So I'm climbing up into this other crack that, it's essentially this slab of the canyon wall has fallen off of the canyon, and it's standing upright, a little angled, a little, tilted, and I climb up in there and start shimmying my way up this chimney, these two slabs of rock that are close enough together to climb up. And I'm looking down and I'm like, it's too late. If you wanted to go back now, you couldn't. It'd be more dangerous to do that than to keep going. And if you've ever been to Paladro Canyon, everything is like, all of the rock is sand. It's sandstone. So it's breaking, it's brittle. I'm in running shoes, not climbing shoes, and my hands are just sliding down this stone, but I'm wedged in between these two pieces, and the canyon walls are pretty tall. So I'm like 40 feet up. And since one of those walls is tilted, I'm getting further, like it's getting wider and wider and wider. And so I'm pretty spread eagle trying to get out of this hole. And there's a cactus at the very top of this ledge. So it's like, I got to dodge. Not only do I have to, you know, jump out of this hole at the very top, I have to dodge this cactus. So I keep looking down and I'm like, well, I mean, you've made it this far. Like, there's no going back now. And it was weird. Like, there was a moment where I thought, like, I could die, like, right now. I could die right now. I could slip. This rock could give way. And nobody would find me for a while, probably. Because I also didn't really tell anybody where I was going. Don't do that, people. If you're listening, if you go on a run in the wilderness or state park or national park, tell people where you're going. And I make it out just fine. You know, it was really just all a head game, and then potentially just an accidental rock breakage that could have killed me. But you know, it's those moments like that where you are close to, you know, anything could go wrong right now. Anything could go wrong and I could die. That you're like, wow, I feel alive. I feel alive as hell right now. And it's one of my favorite memories. It's not as like epic and crazy as some other things that people have experienced as far as near death experiences. You know, I've also almost died of a heat stroke out there, and that's probably scarier than this situation. But you know, it's dangerous and alluring is the words that I'd use to describe it. You know, those things that make you feel alive, those things that really make you put you up close and personal to your mortality. So that's
I completely agree, man. I actually have almost the exact same story over in Utah, but we'll save that for another time.
Okay. All right.
Well, cool. Do you have a challenge for our guys and girls listening?
Okay. A challenge. Go wander. Go spend a day. Find somewhere where you don't get a service. You don't get cell phone service. You don't have internet. Perhaps don't even go ahead and take your phone just in case. Don't focus on food. Bring water and just spend a day wandering and see what happens. See what medicine comes. So that's my challenge.
That's awesome. I hope some people listen to that, because I think it'd be pretty interesting for them and me. I'll probably take you up on it. So
yeah, and take a picture. Tag me in it. Shoot. All right, go ahead.
Heck yeah. Well, Jonah, thank you so much for coming on and sharing some of your wisdom and a story about your trip. It was quite a cool experience that I had not heard of anybody else doing. So thank you so much for your time, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Anytime. To everybody else, thank you for joining us as well. Don't forget to check out skellies.com for some cool clothes from Jonah's group. And please check out the Read Thoughts podcast as well. Jonah does a great job over there, and I think you really enjoy it. We appreciate you guys, and we look forward to connecting with you soon.